Yeah, doing yourself a disservice if what portfolio is like some past work and you know you've gotten better than that. So you need to really, really share your work. Just look at it and like some things are like out of place, some things are not aligned. You just close it. It's more like, let me not lie.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Spotlight Podcast. This podcast is for curious minds and aspiring innovators. We dive deep to discuss informative, inspiring, and offbeat conversations on technology, business, product, and innovation to supercharge your career. I am your host, Iwalola Shebowale. I'm a passionate advocate for insightful discussions that inspire change and growth. Our guest for today is Ayodeji Olagbaye. He is a product designer who began his journey about 5 years ago and is an active member of a lot of design communities, actually. Notably, he currently works as a product designer at Kuda Bank, but he's also a community advocate for Friends of Figma Lagos. And he's also building Tiny Type, a software for artists. And I know he's also building something else that I know he may not be comfortable discussing yet. He also has a degree in petroleum and gas engineering, which blows my mind, actually. Because I'm like, why didn't you enter oil and gas? But we'll hear more from him. He studied at the University of Lagos. So welcome, Deji. It's really a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. I'm
excited. Are you shocked?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had a bit of time already. This is actually not my first conversation with Deji. We have actually covered this topic a bit previously. So I'm sure that, you know, the conversation would even be more like interesting and ripe now. So I'm really glad that you agreed to come on podcast to discuss this. But before we get into the main cocoa of the matter, we're going to be playing a little icebreaker. It's a card game that, I don't know, came out from one side of my brain one day. And I'm like, this sounds interesting. And we'll try it. Hopefully you would enjoy the game as much as I've enjoyed. I'm still currently working on the game. It's not like fully done yet, but it's a card game. I will share my screen now.
Okay.
Let me find it. Okay. I will share my screen with you and then explain the rules of the game. Please let me know if and or when you can see my screen.
Yeah, I can see the screen.
Okay, cool. So, I don't know, the name of the game is still work in progress. I have like two things I'm thinking about. One is called is Techies Assemble. The other one I'm thinking, what's the big idea? But I don't know, if you're like my age range, what's the big idea? You know, it's like a BBC or something show. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like
I've heard something.
So yeah. I'm like, I might not be stealing the name. But anyway, it's just to bring like a fun edge, I guess, to our conversations and discussions. And it's just to like get you thinking creatively and just make it fun. Yeah, some questions are a little bit, how would I say, colorful, right? But they're hypothetical scenarios. Yeah, so the way it goes is you select an emoji here and then we'll turn over the card to show you what's underneath. And basically, it's a scenario that you would then need to answer. Yeah, so which emoji do you want to go for? We'll go for three.
Okay, first one, probably the ghost emoji at the bottom left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, let's zoom in. All right, this is the scenario. Do you want me to read this out or would you like to?
Yeah, I can read that. You're organizing a tech conference, what keynote speakers and panel discussions do you arrange to inspire attendees? Keynote speakers. For me, I'm guessing probably be a design conference, probably.
Okay,
I mean,
design
conference. There are a lot of tech conferences. I mean, they're like most developer conferences. So I think I'll just like a design focused one. Probably the first one I'll probably do is, or the first speaker I think of right now is having somebody like what's the guy's name? Daniel Abayomi. So he's currently a product designer at Meta.
Okay.
Which is like, you know, Facebook parent company. I mean, so he pretty much started as like a product designer of like a tech company. I think he then worked with Brad. He worked with a few other companies before he got to Meta. And obviously Meta is like a really big. So like I think I'll just have him like just talk about like his journey from learning product design to, you know, getting into Meta, because I think that's like a really, really big deal for you to like
get into. Yeah, of course, to be honest.
A big company, because I mean, for you to get into a company like that, man, you have to like, be really good at what you do. So like,
yeah,
really, really inspiring and like impressive feat.
Have you, if he's done any speaking engagements in the past story?
Well, I mean, so I've been to a design conference where he actually spoke. He gave a talk. I can't remember what the topic was about, but I think at least I know I've listened to him talk once. I don't know if it's something that he does a lot, but I think maybe if I probably reach out to him. I also do one. I probably reach out to him. Maybe it might be okay to do it. What keynote speaker, the panel discussions. Second one. So just to be inclusive, I definitely want to have like a female speaker, because I feel another problem.
Wow, I'm sorry, you said just to be inclusive, or are you saying that normally you wouldn't?
No, I need to be inclusive. So like a lot of, another small problem that we have with a lot of these like tech conferences, I mean, it's mostly guys that are always talking, like maybe they just speak like maybe like one woman, yeah, or like maybe they have like a partner, really. Yeah, like they just add it like, oh, let's not be like, it's not, yeah. So, but I think I definitely want to have like, you know, if female speaker to be one of the major speakers and not like any side or something. So probably just talk about, you know, maybe some of the challenges with, you know, getting a tech career or getting tech as a woman, like maybe some of the challenges that you face. I think generally, I mean, being a woman, I mean, I think in Nigeria, pretty much as they were, like, you're not encouraged to, like, after, like, you know, all this, like, tech-focused careers, like, they'll probably tell you, you know, maybe just marry each other, but then your husband will finish up for you or something like that. So, like, yeah. I just have a talk about stuff like that. Also, like, you know, being to, like, inspire, like, you know, other young women or young girls in school, especially, like, you know, you don't have, there is no career that is too, like, I know, impact.
Yeah, to be, you know, it's actually amazing whenever I just hear one Nigerian name like in one far off like place I never even imagined, I'm always like, wow, okay, that means it's possible,
really. yeah it's possible, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, just for you to just see people like yourself there, you know, get inside. Then also one more, I mean, so now with the creation of AI, right, we have AI this, AI that, AI is pretty much embedded in almost everything that we do. Everybody's adding AI to their product offering. I don't understand. So like, I think I'll probably have somebody that probably works in the AI field come and talk about, you know, what are the benefits and how like you can aid your work as a designer. I know there's also been a tough talk about like, yeah, AI will come and replace our jobs, but I don't believe AI will replace our jobs. So like, you know, just come and talk about the benefits and like how you can like utilize AI in your day to day, and I can like speed up your workflow and stuff like that. So, yeah,
nice. Actually, now it's only very interesting. Are you sure? I want to attend this conference, please. When is it happening?
you should talk about organizing it.
Yeah, this actually sounds really interesting. Awesome. Yeah. So, what next? Okay, let's just do one more. I don't want us to go way over time. So, which other card?
Yeah, so the one that's like an alien head. So, we want to talk about the clown. Yeah.
Down.
You're organizing a tech startup pitch competition. What criteria do you evaluate and select the winning pitch? What criteria will I use? I mean, so like you're trying to determine the business that is viable, the one that you feel like, you know, has more potential, and the one that can serve majority of Nigerians, right? So I know that obviously one problem that we have is a lot of Nigerians don't have disposable income, right? So I mean, a lot of people might have like great ideas for like products or services, but people just cannot
just know your markets
or like, your business. So like, yeah, so if it's like a product or service that I feel like, you know, almost the average Nigerian, like you don't have to be like super rich able to afford that, like you can serve as many Nigerians as possible, or as many people as possible. I'm not saying Nigerian. Yeah, like, you know, I'll just use that, okay, this is a business that I know that can do very well, and yeah, the winner, and I'll give you investment, and, you know, 5-6 years or something.
Awesome, actually.
Company will come and buy you, and I made my money. So yeah.
As in God, please. I mean, so I'm looking for that perfect investment that will just invest 100k yeah, so that, and get and 1 billion.
I guess it's like 10 billion.
Oh,
like the paystack, like the paystack thing. So yeah.
Honestly, like that's what I'm looking for right now.
Yeah, and I just retire and just
as in,
know, buy one nice house somewhere by the beach or something. And just
get as in, and they just be going for conferences and talking about just try and find that right community.
And be traveling and just like living soft life. Yeah,
honestly. If anyone has, the scoop for me about, is there any company or business you're building or product you're building that can invest 100k and I'm guaranteed 1 billion naira by next year, please just let me know. In fact, the way I'll fling the money at you. Awesome. That was really fun, actually, Deji. Thank you so much. So now we'll be going into the topic of the day. We're talking today about designing your UX portfolio in 2024, and I felt that he was like the perfect person to discuss this, because I've actually had a prior conversation with him and he has a lot of gems to share. But before we get into the topic, Deji, could you please introduce yourself? Is there anything I haven't covered about you? Is there any secret information we don't know?
All right, so yeah, thank you, Iwalela. So yeah, just to introduce myself, my name is Ayodeji. I'm currently a product designer at Kuda Bank. So I've been a product designer for a couple of years now. Originally started as a developer or like a front-end developer. So I learned HTML, CSS, JavaScript, a bit of React. I mean, it was fun while it's very long. When I found design, I just realized that I preferred designing to writing code. So like I've just been designing ever since. So I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I have any extra but I mean just like personal stuff. So I like watching movies, I like listening to music, I like art pretty much, like so I like this, like art galleries, I like
wow, are you serious?
Yeah, like one of those
I still don't understand that.
You have like one of those rich old men that just be walking and be like and this is very captivating and just tell the artist that you want to buy the art for like $1 million and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I just like that people are able to like create, like something beautiful just in their mind, like something that doesn't exist. Like someone just wakes up one day and like just creates this beautiful painting and everything just coming from your head. So I like that, people are able to do that, like create something from nothing. Like it's really, really mind blowing. Like you just looking at some of the stuff that you just want, like how do you think about this thing? Like that stuff that really interests me. So
I honestly really envy like artists. I can't even draw a house. I cannot draw I can't even draw it. Like if I have to draw a human being, it's a stick figure. Like I'm terrible. Like I really envy artists. Yeah, so you mentioned that your background is front end. So are you one of those designers that are front end engineers hits now?
I don't know, Shabba.
Think about it very well.
Thankfully, I think I work with front end developers that know their work. So like we haven't really had a lot of like friction. Okay. And I think also for like developer handoff. So the way we do developer handoff at Kuda, I think for now it's like an efficient process. So we don't really have like a lot of like back and forth or like maybe the front end developer, maybe a case of what I designed
versus what was delivered.
What the developer did, all those things. So like also another thing that we do is even when the developers are done, like we sort of just look at it like do like a small design audit to make sure that everything is the way it's supposed to be and like nothing is out of place. But generally they do a good job. So like
speaking from a really place of experience. Yeah, I'm sure you design something, maybe the radius is 10 degrees. They will go
I worked in a place where like what the developer creates and what you just be like, are you sure you like think that design when you do this thing? Like I'd be like you're doing your own design of the
honestly, their own interpretation of your design.
But I think also design developer process or handle sometimes there can be a bit of like friction. Like maybe we don't give them all the assets or information that they need, they can make mistakes. So I mean sometimes Sometimes the problem might be from your side, sometimes it doesn't be from
that. Should that enter this conversation? Because I've seen people saying, who is meant to give the assets? Is it the developer that is going to go and bring out
the designer is meant to
the design? Sorry, I know I'm not a designer, but that actually just all makes sense to me. Like, I don't know why is it the developer that is expected to go and start
digging? I mean, because the developer just comes to like Figma to like look at what I'm doing. So you are the one like, okay, they don't really have like edit access, right? They can only view, so they can't really like anything.
Yeah.
So if you need to like export anything, or the one that would do it, that's okay. These are the icons, or these are like the illustrations, or something like that. So. Yeah, so I mean, it doesn't take time.
I don't like, hear this conversation on my Twitter timeline again. Designers are meant to hand off all assets.
Awesome. And right now, there are like plugins that can help with stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
That's so really. There's no excuse.
Just lazy. Abi, maybe you are just lazy. Awesome. Thank you so much. So what are you currently reading, watching, listening to? If you want to be like, you know, you, what do we need to be watching and reading?
I read a lot of like articles on Medium. So around different topics, sometimes like design related, sometimes just like maybe like personal stuff or like, you know, life updates, stuff like that. As far as watching, so I'm currently watching this series called Fallout on Amazon Prime. Actually it has been really good so far. I have a lot of like shows on Netflix that, you know, on my watch list, but I've just not had time. But I want to watch this Three Body Problem. I've not watched it yet, but
I'm same
on my list. I did really good show, but
I feel like I need to be in the zone to watch it.
I feel like, you know, I need to probably like when I take leave, I'll just take my time and watch everything.
This actually, you know, that's one problem I have with taking leave. I don't want to just take leave and not have a plan. Like, I want a well curated leave period. Did you get?
I mean, sometimes you might just like feel like, you know, you just want to sleep most of the day or something. It depends, but I'm just like stockpiling all the things I'm going to be doing. So that when I'm on leave, I'll just, you know, every day I have something to do or something to watch. Or
as
something
in, to do. There's nothing worse than taking leave and being bored. Awesome. So how did you get into UX design? So you mentioned, you know, the switch from front end. So why did you even get into front end? Then why did you now make the switch?
So my initial reason for like wanting to get a career in tech at the time was just like trying to like switch jobs and like, you know, sort of like prepare myself for like the future, right? So like I think at the time where I was working a sales job at the time, and I was sort of like, you know, trying to figure out what the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years is going to look like for me. Because I felt like, you know, as an introverted person, a sales job is not very ideal. Like, it was something that I felt like I would thrive in for that long, right? So like, it was something that I felt like, okay, let me just do it for now, like, you know, get something else doing. So I went to Google one evening, and I was like, you know, what are like the skills that are going to be relevant in the next couple of years, right? So coding was actually on top skill at the time. So I was like, okay, let me try to figure out, you know, if I can learn this coding thing. And like at the time, even on Twitter, you see a lot of developers making noise and like, oh, I just built this project, I just invented this website, you know, they just paid me like $2 million for this thing.
You're just seeing dollar signs, you're like, this is making sense.
This is about just like, you know, the arrogance that just, you know,
I
was like, okay,
like, seemed on top of the world. They seemed like,
they feel like they are like, you know, superstars, they are really superstars. But so like, you know, I decided, okay, let me learn this thing, right? So I quit my job. I tried to quit my job and like I signed up for a camp, right? So a lot of boot camps right now, that's like Trafford, there's I think maybe at Decagon, then a couple of, you know, boot camps that you can go to learn different skill sets. So it's never like only coding. It could also be like products, being a product manager, product development, being a like, you know, maybe like product marketing manager, data manager, that ton of, you know, careers that you could like go into, right? So I just said, okay, let me learn front end development, right? So I did that for about 3 months. Go on internship, like a really small like startup, right? And when I say really small startup, like I mean like we are like 4 people in the office, right? It was just like young people, right? So basically what we did was
wasn't that trial by fire.
So maybe what we just do, like, you know, clients who just reach out to us that maybe they want a app built or design, or they want like a website. So like we just you know, be the ones to implement it. So at the time we didn't have like a designer on the team, right? So I was like the only person on the team that seemed to have like an interest in design, or like, you know, because for me to even like code and build up a website, I had to go to like Google and Bing and look for like designs to like create. So it just seemed like I had a good eye for like design. So the head of this, I thought, okay, since it seems like, you know, after everybody I'm done that knows what the best design to go with, let me be the design guy on the team, right?
Wow, so, even as an intern, that sounds like
Yeah, at the time, I mean, it was a small startup. But me, I was just happy, like, oh, I was finally trying to like get into the future. So I was just like, you know, I was just happy to learn pretty much.
Okay.
So started by recreating design that I liked on Dribbble, right? I'm so like doing because of doing that, I just realized, oh, I really enjoy doing this more than enjoy writing, because I was pretty much like the designated designer, right? Okay. Then also I just kept practicing. I'll post like my designs on Twitter, I'll post like some of my designs on LinkedIn, get some good comments, get some good feedback, you know, on how I could maybe like make them better and stuff like that, which was good. I mean, that's one thing that I pretty much like about like the design community. Like even when you're starting out and like you're posting your work, it doesn't have to be perfect. Like it doesn't matter how, even if your design is bad, it's fine. Like nobody's expecting that, you know. When you're starting out, everything is just going to be shiny and everything is going to be clean and everything. And people will just give you feedback and say, oh, you know, this is a good attempt, but this is what you can do to make it better. And you could maybe, they can even, I mean, somebody on Twitter paid for a Udemy course for me just because you saw that, oh, this young guy seems to be really interested in this thing.
Wow. And
that's really work. So, yeah, I think the design community is very, very helpful, especially to newbies, right? So during the course of doing that also, there was another virtual internship that came up by this company called Venture Garden Group, right? The office is somewhere in Kenya. So I applied, I got in. The internship was going to be for 3 months also. So pretty much was going to be learning, like a structured learning program, right? You know, I did that for 3 months. At the end of the 3 months, we do like a final project presentation, everything we learned, and I did that with some other people. I think at the time we were about 100 at the time, and like at the end of the presentation,
100 interns.
I mean, so like it was like a virtual internship, so all of us were just like in a Slack.
Like, I was wondering how that would have looked like.
Yeah, okay. All of us were just like in a Slack group, and like, you know, like every couple of days, I think maybe like 3 days in a week, we just have like different sessions with like, you know, some of the employees of the organization, and they just run us through different topics, and then they give us like an assignment to do, which we'll have to do, and then come back and submit and present and explain why we did it like that. So it was really like, it was just like as if you're in school pretty much, right? Then after the presentation,
really, really great. Actually,
yeah, it was actually a good program. Yeah, it was actually really good. So like after the like 3 months after the presentation, you know, they now gave like a few, but they gave 4 of us. I, Kingsley, Stephanie, yeah, 4 of us. They gave 4 of us like full time roles to come and join the company. And like, you know, I was like,
wow, after excited, 100 like, oh, people. No, you must have been amazing. People,
like, I was feeling on top of the world. Like I was like,
honestly. My God, like.
But I mean, so one thing I just like about myself, right? I feel like, you know, no matter the situation I find myself in, I feel like I can always like persevere, and I can always like pick myself up and like that put my mind to like, you know, okay, I'm going to learn this thing, I'll actually do, like it might take some time, but you know that eventually I'll start getting right. So after that, you know, got full time roles. So like got into the company with the probation period for the first 6 months, you know. That was also successful, and I pretty much just stayed at company for like 2 years. Yeah, about 2 years. So I work primarily with a edtech startup. So the company is like a holding company, like a big company that has like startups under it. So like startups in different fields. There's like fintech, there's edtech, there's avitech, aviation, like there are different industries, but I work primarily in the edtech startup. So it's called EduTech Global. That was like the name of the company, EduTech Global. And there for 2 years, a lot of learning, a lot of I think working at a company pretty much just refined my design skills, right? So I mean, you're allowed to make a lot of mistakes, and when you make a mistake, you just get feedback. So we are like a design lead, like somebody that has been designing for like 5-6 years. So I was able to like, you know, be the one to like, you know, correct like your little mistakes and stuff like that. So that first 2 years, I feel like that really like refined my design skills. And then after being there for 2 years, you know, finally decided, you know, I needed something more challenging, because I feel like at some point of your work, you feel like your work seems a bit intensive, or it seems easy, like your day-to-day is almost like the same. It doesn't really seem like,
I think creative,
doing anything new.
Creative is always doing something new.
Like it just seems like intention, like you know, thing, like, yeah. So I'm not saying, you know, I wanted like a completely different field, right? And like, because at the time, in tech, especially in Nigeria, is like a really big industry, like, you know, a lot of people are going to fintech and everybody's doing payment solution and this and that.
And then ending up selling it.
And I mean, so I feel like, you know, there's still a lot to do, even with like the payment space in Nigeria, like with something like cross-border payment, for example. Like,
yeah,
okay, we have a lot of apps now where you can send and receive money, you can pay bills, you can. Maybe you have like, you know, a card feature, virtual card, physical card. But I think as far as like, you know, being able to send money to other countries, being able to receive money, that's still like a space that, you know, a lot of people are still like getting into, right? So yeah, so I saw an opening for a product designer role on LinkedIn from CUDA at the time. I thought, like, okay, let me apply. And also I've been using the CUDA app even before that. So like I just like, you know, that was like my primary bank at the time, right? Because there are a lot of things that they're doing that just made things convenient, right, for users. So like maybe things like you wanted to get a new card now, for example, right? In most traditional banks, you would have to like go to the bank, you'd have to fill a form, and
freeze the card, change the password.
Yeah, they are giving them details that they already have, like, I want them to fill a form and they write my name and stuff. So, like, you have my name, you have my information already. So, it just seems like unnecessary. And, like, you know, we could have, like, once you make a request on the app, you know, you can either go and pick up if you want, or you could have a dispatch command bring the car to your house. So, like, a lot of stuff was just, like, you know, convenient and easy. So, like, okay, let me apply to this space, you know. Did an interview, did an assessment, did a culture fit interview and all of that. And, you know, finally got an offer and I was like, you know, super excited. You know, accepted the offer, got in. So I've been at the company now for about, I think this June would make it 3 years. Yeah, this June make it 3 years. So, I mean, that's been like a really fun and challenging ride, but mostly fun because we have like a dedicated design team, right? And I absolutely love design team. You know, everybody's very, very supportive of, you know, everybody else. And we have like weekly reviews of everybody's work. And like, you know, if you're having a challenge or anything, you could always reach out and like people give you like, you know, ideas on how you can do this, how you can do that. And like, you know, it's just like a really great team. We are about, how many are we in design team? Like about 14. Well, about 14, 15, yeah, but yeah, it's really, really nice working environment, like that. And we're fully remote, which is great, so like, you know.
Oh, like the icing on the cake.
I don't have to deal with, like, you know, Lagos traffic and all of that. Yeah. So, like, you know, it's really, really nice to just wake up and, like, go to your computer and just, like, you know, start work and not just worry about, I need to rush, I need to leave my
stuff. I get to work, you're tired already.
Yeah, and, like, when you're coming back home again, you have to do that again. And it's like, Please, like, as I'm right now, I don't think I can even like do a job that requires me to be.
I think once you've
to be on
tasted
site,
both.
yeah. Once you taste that remote, you can for you for them to get you back in the office, they have to pay you like maybe like
as
10
in.
or something.
Even then, you still be annoyed.
And yeah, that going back to the office, maybe like only on Friday. Or
as in,
maybe, like
maybe
Monday.
Once or twice a week.
I cannot do Monday. No,
I swear.
Yeah.
Awesome, so, yeah. awesome. Any regrets? Any regrets at all? Would you change anything about the way you know?
So I feel like yes. Well, not exactly like a regret, you guys like that, but I feel like I would have started a lot earlier than I did. So like maybe I think during the NYC period, I wasn't really like doing much during the NYC period. I mean, I was just like, you know, focused on like my PPA work, but I still had like free time.
Okay.
I feel like knowing what I know now, I would probably just go to get myself during the NYC period, like immediately after school, pretty much like go and start learning design. Like I won't have even bother with like, you know, and with software development. I'll just go and tell myself, like, guy, go and start learning design. Like I open YouTube now. Start playing UX or something like that.
So going to the oil rig was not in your.
It was not like your, I feel like, to be honest, like I've thought about it. Like I feel like, you know, even if I did work as a bachelor engineer, right, and like and I stumbled on design as a career path, I feel like at some point I will have still want to make this switch, right? So I mean, as much as you know, making money is nice, you still want to do a job that you actually enjoy doing, and like, you know, something that you have like something like you have a desire for. So like if I was working as a petroleum engineer, it would pretty much just be for money. It wouldn't be like a job that also this is like a fun, exciting, like, you know, I actually want to be doing this. It's just like, okay, that paying you well, so let me do it. I mean, I've been at an oil rig for when I was just in uni. And I was doing like IT. I did go to like an oil rig somewhere in Warri. I think it was even more big. Yeah, it was like on a really big ship. It's called an FPSO, floating something. But it's basically like a rig on the ship. So like there's a really long pipe that connects from the bottom of the ship to like the ocean
like,
bottom.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
And that's where like they drill the oil and stuff. I mean, it's not a bad job, but like it's a lot of like physically
demanding
taxing, physically demanding work. So like, you know, you are going to get very sweaty, you are going to get very tired. Like I mean, this is why they pay you well, because the work you are doing is not like it's
not easy.
Like,
yeah.
It's not an easy job. So like so I feel like even if I was working at the personal engineer, I will have probably still want to like be there. So I'd be a creative person. So like, you know, at the end of the day, I would have still wanted to do something creative, whether as a side thing, whether as a hobby, like I'll have still been
maybe
that
side. Don't petroleum companies need designers too? I mean, you have the educational background, you have the work experience. When they need to design
I think they do actually. I mean, so I mean, most of them obviously they have like a website.
Yeah.
They have like I guess like, you know, they put out like maybe like social media.
I'm sure they will have some dashboards.
Yeah, they would have. So maybe not even like as a full time, maybe even as a contract, but like some of the software that they use, obviously somebody has to design it. So like
you can consider that now. Go and check out.
Maybe if I see that
looking
for a product designer, maybe.
They won't have to be explaining wanting hydrogen gas, whatever.
They'll just be like, this guy has let's just
find
$1 million a month. Yeah, I'll take it.
That's $1 million a month. I swear that's like the same salary that's like my same dream salary right now.
So I will take it.
Yeah.
The least I'll manage $8 million a month, but my target will be
as
like
you,
10.
Honestly.
I'll manage it. Yeah.
Awesome. So when you were telling us about like your story, how did your portfolio like factor into it? So you talked about how you applied, so you got internship at Venture Garden Group. Did you have to build a portfolio when you were doing your boot camp? So when did you even start realizing that you need a portfolio? How was it instrumental in any way getting you like your internship and then your job at Kuda Bank?
Okay, so at the time when I entered Venture Garden Group, so it was really just my the final project that I did and presented that got me in, right? So at that time, I did not really, need a portfolio, right? So like, as somebody that is just like starting out, they don't really expect you to have like, you know, portfolio, but you sort of need to have at least something that you can show that just sort of explains or just shows your thinking and like your problem solving skills and also like your UI design skills. So they want to see how your design actually looks like, right? But then after working at Venture Garden Group, I wanted to move to another company, wanting to, you know, do a job change. That was when I realized, oh, now I need to have like a portfolio, right? So at the time, just because of I wanted to just have something quickly, I just put my portfolio on Notion, right? I just had like a mini portfolio on Notion that had like, I think like two or three case studies at the time. Yeah, so then I applied to CUDA. I mean, so we could obviously from you want to see that, okay, this person actually, you know, has the skill set that we need. So you don't necessarily need to have like a, maybe like a fintech or like a payment, like, you know, product that you have got on previous, although it helps.
Okay.
And it gives you like obviously an advantage over other people. But at the time, I didn't work on like a payment product at the time when I got into CUDA.
Yeah, it was EdTech, right?
Yeah. It was mostly EdTech,
So was your portfolio just like your work at Venture Garden Group?
Yeah. So at the time, it was just mainly my work at Venture Garden Group. Yeah.
Do you still have that portfolio? Or you've changed it already?
I mean, maybe if I look for it, I might find it. But right now, I moved. So right now, my portfolio is going to be on Framer. So I basically moved from Notion to Figma. Yeah, from Notion to Figma, but now I'm moving to like Framer. Yeah.
Okay. And thinking back to your first portfolio, what do you wish you knew then that maybe you know now that you think would have probably given you a bit more of an edge?
So at the time, I mean, so I think one of the mistakes or one of the things I just pretty much did at the time, it was like, you know, when writing the case study, I just put a lot of like information, like I basically put like almost everything that, you know, we did. So I put a lot of raw content or a lot of raw data, right? So like, let's say for example, you do user research, right? And you send them maybe like a survey link, right? So like I put like all the questions that I
link to the survey,
like the responses, I put like, you know, the, so like when you send a form with Google Forms, right, it shows you like a breakdown. You can say, oh, 50% said yes, 50% said no. So I think for recruiters, they don't necessarily need every detail, right? What they need is, okay, you did research. Why did you do that research? And then what were the research insights? And like, okay, from the research insights, how did that now like influence the final design or the final solution? So you don't need to like actually put like every single thing that you did. So because you just make your case study look cumbersome. Like, yeah, obviously, from your perspective, you just want to show that, yeah, you did this work and, like, you know, you want to show how much effort you put into, like, you know, this case study and, you know, trying to figure out this feature, this new application, this new product and stuff. But, like, you know, recruiters don't have a lot of time to read through your case study. So they don't need everything. What they need is, like, the important stuff, like, you know, just put, like, the importance of that influenced your final design, your final solution. That's what actually needs to be there. So I think, you know, at the time I would have just made my case studies really long and come back on stuff that showed like every single thing. You know, you stayed up to like 11 p.m. You did this, you did that, you did graphing, you did perform, you did persona. So it was more of just like ticking boxes of like, oh, this is all of this have to be my case study. I have to prepare person, I have to put that I did research, I have to put that I did wireframe, I have to put like I did small style guide, I have to put, so it was more of like feeling like my case study process was like a formula. So like even if I had like two, three case studies, the same. It's not possible that every single product that you work on are going to use the same process. Like that's never possible. Right? So like I feel like knowing what I know now is to write the case study exactly the way that you could get that product was done. Right? It's not about like, oh, this has to be there for positive. It's not if the person, if the use of persona did not aid in like the final product, the final solution, there's no need for it to be there. If maybe there was no time to do wireframe, then don't put it there, like don't put it there that you do wireframe. That like, no need, it doesn't matter, right? No research was done, or maybe you did like guerrilla research because you know, maybe there was no time, or there was not enough time to do that. That was the research that you did, or maybe like you know, based on like analytics of like users using the product, you're able to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there were drop offs at this point.
So you knew something had to change.
Yeah, something had to change. Maybe like we had to improve the onboarding process. We had to improve the stuff like that. So just write it the way the product was actually done. I'm not like you know, formula. Let me put this. So
yeah. So would you say that's like the mark of like an experienced designer versus like a beginner?
Yeah. Actually, like I feel like I think also it's not really the fault of the junior designer or maybe designer. I think also like for people that maybe go to a boot camp, that's what they are taught, right? Also, if you read a lot of case studies on Medium, right? So Medium, I mean, for me, they don't really like fact check stuff. Anybody's allowed to write.
Of course, yes.
Like if you just go to Medium and read like 2-3 case studies, you sort of feel like, oh, because this person did this, let me also do it.
Yeah.
Right? You need to understand that, like, you know, every project is completely different. So like, you don't have to feel like, oh, we have to copy somebody else's work. I mean, you sort of take inspiration from the way they outline or lay out the case study and just make it easy to read and easy to digest. But you feel like, you know, because the person puts user personality, put, you know, you don't need to do stuff like that. So I mean, you can easily tell when you see this kind of case study, you can tell that, oh, this person is just starting out and this person is new. So you expect this sort of mistakes. But
So actually, now that you're saying this, thinking about it, so actually, if you're learning anything in general, you start from somewhere. So you start to usually maybe the formula that somebody has used in the past. And then after that, you start creating your own way of thinking about that thing. So I guess what we're saying is though, not necessarily that, you know, because your portfolio follows like all these steps that it tells you your bootcamp, that doesn't mean that that doesn't mean that there's no value there. It just shows that you're still learning, basically, right?
Yeah.
Just like a baby that's trying to learn how to walk and there isn't a walker. After a while, you leave the worker and you start working. Once you're, you know,
and you start doing,
awesome. So, you mentioned how, you know, like recruiters don't have much time looking at your portfolios. Did you see this thing on Twitter where somebody posted a CV that had like all sorts of rubbish in it, but because it had like some metrics? Did you see that?
Okay, I think I stumbled on that.
I'm not joking.
The guy said he just created like a random.
Some part of it, he said, like, he was playing with his puppy. I'm like. And I promise you, I looked at that CV. I thought I looked at it in depth, and I didn't spot all those things. Wow.
Yeah.
It just really shows.
I was really shocked. I was not like, so even all that, even like take our time to get the CV. Like, I'm not even.
Yeah.
It's a bit, but
it just really shows what you were explaining, that recruiters don't have time. And even from your perspective, like recruiting, you don't really have much time, right? You probably have like a few minutes. You're looking through like maybe at minimum 100, do you get? At minimum 100 CVs, and you're like, where do you even start from? So what would you say are like the key things? Let's say you have 30 seconds to look at your portfolio. What are the key things you look out for in your portfolio?
I mean, to be honest, I would look at visuals actually. So I feel like, you know, as long as you get better with like UX as you walk, as you go along pretty much, right? But I feel like nobody wants to now like have somebody that they have to do a lot of hand holding for
when it comes to like UI.
This
is not 90 degrees now. Can't you see?
Because like that would just create like a lot of like back and forth and a lot of confusion. Like, okay, you have to go back and do this again. But no, because I feel like once your UI is at a certain level and you can just get better with UI.
Okay.
You're working with a team, right? Based on feedback, based on maybe
even the product like manager.
You guys will figure out how to improve the product, how to improve the experience. But I let you be decent enough. So I mean, one of the first things that will catch my eyes. Okay, Vuia is good. Like, if Vuia is good, I would then want to read more. But if Vuia is not good, then, like, there's like, no point.
Mm-hmm.
You can have somebody that is just learning design and making a lot of mistakes. Like, it wouldn't matter whether the case study was actually...
You just be seeing, like, maybe the colors are not clashing.
Yeah, once you just look at it and, like, things are, like, out of place, something are not aligned, you just close it. It's not to be wicked or anything, but you just know that this person still needs a bit more time to learn. So, like, you're not at the stage where you can, like, actually, like, work and, like, actually, like, build out a designing product. So, like, one of the first things, visuals. Once the visuals are good, okay, let me now, like, maybe read it a bit and see some other information. Visuals one, and then just, like, just the way you pretty much lay out your case study, so lay out the information, like, okay, maybe you start with, like, a problem, challenge, and, like, okay, this was what I wanted to do, this was what I then did, and then this was, like, the result. So, like, just very digestible, case study, nothing too cumbersome, nothing too robust, and, like, the language is very simple. So, like, you have to write your, and this is just a mistake that I have made in the past, right? You write your case study in a way that the average person can understand. Mm-hmm. Not write your case study, with the technical terms or technical words that you feel like, oh, everybody in your field already understands, right? Because it's very possible to just write it with your thinking that, okay, everybody understands certain words, everybody understands, but really actually, you have to understand this is just your own field, right? We have terms for certain things, and the average person outside does not know these things, right? And the mistake that I've made. So you have to be, the language on your case study is very simple. That the average person comes and reads it, they can understand that, okay, this was what the problem was. Maybe they noticed that from onboarding, the information they were asking users was too much, and users were jumping off at a certain page. So now they're not like ending, made it easier, like, okay. Once you answer like two questions, you have entered the application, and then maybe subsequently they ask more questions, and maybe they do questions. So just make the process for onboarding easier. Like, very simple, very straightforward. Mm-hmm. Not like you start using, CBN said we should put this and, like, you now attach, like, you now put everything, you put, like, maybe you can put, like, screenshots of, like, your Slack messages, product managers, we are discussing, like, everything now be long.
Oh, God. Okay.
So there's no need for all of that. So, yeah, so I feel like, all the visuals are okay. The layout, the way you lay out the information, and then the language you use to actually write the case study, all those things are good. I mean, 10 over 10, you are in, you get a call from it, for sure.
So, like, in terms of the length, do you think, like, so I can see that you're leaning towards like a shorter, more concise case study, right? Yeah. But do you think there are other recruiters who may want to really dig deeper into, like, and if you think there's value in maybe, I don't know, having like a shorter case study, and then if you really want to go and look into everything, here is the longer version.
So I feel like, good question. So I mean, like I said, every project is different, right? Some projects might not require you to do a lot, right? Which is interesting. But there are some projects where maybe they even span like months, or maybe like something you're working on for like a year. So like that might be a bit long. So that might, because you might need to like explain a lot of things, right? Which is very understandable. But I feel like as long as you don't make it too maybe like like a tiring read or something, like maybe you don't make it exhausting in a way. Right. Okay. I feel like it's fine. Like, okay, maybe you just explain strategic project, January of 2020, and like, we did this. I mean, when we were done, we did testing for like one month, and then we realized, you don't understand this part, and like, we had to go and redesign it. And then, so I think there's a way that you can write it that it won't be exhausting to read, and like, people don't understand, okay, this is why that would be very long, maybe this is like the version one. And when they did the usability testing, a close set of users, they realized, this thing actually was not going to work, and they went to go and change it. And then this was new thing, this is version 1.2 or version 2. And so, like, yes, you can understand why it needs to be you know, that long. Yeah. So I mean, it just depends. Every project is different. So some projects might require a bit more like explanation, a bit more breakdown, which is totally fine. But just don't make it like, you know, 10-20. So I think right now we just don't want a lot of text, right? So that, like text heavy. Doesn't mean you shouldn't explain stuff, but like just make it digestible, typify the language as much as you can. And break down. So even when you're writing the case study, right, you don't just pack plenty of text together, but you just like as you read all the stuff. So maybe you can break it down and maybe put some videos on that, write more text, some videos. So just easy to like break down, easy to read. But if you just pack like plenty of text, maybe like
10 paragraphs.
Maybe like the first section of your case study, just put text, and then at the bottom, you now put all the visuals. I think you can sort of read it. It's easier to read, exactly.
So I think that the thing is that a lot of designers have probably realized that their portfolios actually have to be designed. So that's why there's a problem. Like the fact that you have to consider the fact that nobody is reading the paragraphs. You actually have to design it. Every like sentence you use must be valuable, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the things that maybe when people think about designing their portfolios, they're like, come, I beg, this is, I think you'll wait for like another few months. How long how long has it been since you updated your portfolio?
I updated recently, like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Like 2 weeks ago. I still have some updates to make. I'm not even done yet, but yeah.
Okay. How often would you say it?
I feel like I may use probably like to the rest of the month. So like maybe my will split to next month, but so I feel like the mistake, maybe not a mistake, but like I feel like as I was working on the project, I should have started writing the case study then. Like as I'm working on it, like I just sort of like update. I feel like instead of like finishing a project, I mean at the same time it really depends on time, right? But I think it might be easier and even better, like so as like as you're working on a project,
your mind just start writing the case study,
like it's sort of like just updating. That will like, actually make it easier.
But that sounds like a dream world, like.
Yeah, actually.
Like in the ideal world.
Like, at least the memory of what you just did is still fresh in here. So, like, you can just write. So, write that maybe like waiting to be done.
Yeah.
And writing like that when you're not. Now starting like from the beginning, okay, they got PRD, and you're getting like tired because maybe the project is like really like more to do, so like now, and you might have forgotten some stuff.
Forgotten some trade-offs that needed to be made, things like that.
Working on it, it's best to just start writing. Or maybe just at least just keep the information somewhere. Maybe when you're done, you're like, you can find it and make it smaller. Point.
Great point, actually. So you're saying, yes, you may not be able to like design that case study perfectly immediately, right? But just have some doc somewhere where you're documenting
everything.
That's a great point, actually. Yeah. So would you say there's an optimal like period to like update your portfolio? Like, should you update your portfolio maybe once a year or I don't know, every 6 months?
Yeah, so I feel like it's based on like the projects that you're working on. So I feel like, you know, as you work on newer projects, right, that you are proud of and that you like, you definitely should update your portfolio. So, like, you know, there's no reason why in 2024 your projects and portfolio from 2022. Right, I feel like from then to now, obviously, you have done newer stuff, right? So, like, you know, obviously, but also, I mean, some of the stuff that you might have done, well, maybe like we have like external client work that's on the end. Maybe to add it, or like, you know, there should definitely be one or two things that you could just like update. So I think with every year at least, you should at least, you know, try to update your portfolio. So it's not like you just work. I mean, also, as time goes by, as you know, the years go by, your skills get better, your UI skills even get better. So like, you know, you want to be able to show your most recent work that showcases how good you are. You don't want to put like past work. Obviously, you've gotten better than that. Now the work you did in 2021 or 2020, you've actually improved. So you're doing yourself a disservice. If what portfolio is like some past work, and you know you've gotten better than that, because it might show that maybe you're not that good, and you're actually like a lot better now. Or even like added new skills to your skill set. Maybe you've added like motion design, interaction design. So you want to also add that. they can see that, oh, this person can do different stuff. So, yeah, I say probably every year, but also as you work on your projects, right? Once you're done, like, a new project, you feel like they are proud of, just add it to, you know, add it to your portfolio. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, do you think that someone who maybe is like a newbie designer, or just like, you know, yeah, you had your portfolio from Venture Garden Group that go into Kuda Bank, is there any realm of possibility where you could have gotten into Kuda Bank without maybe your portfolio from Venture Garden Group? My question is it possible to get a job as like a designer without having like a, I don't know, at least one big portfolio? Okay, yeah.
So maybe as like as an intern or as like a junior designer, right? So I mean, you don't necessarily, nobody really expecting to have like live projects, right? So I mean, if this is pretty much you just trying to get your first job, right? And you know, we don't like past up, it's totally fine. Like, but you should just have like one. I mean, so even if it's like a fictional project, like fictional product, you just have like one, at least one case study in your portfolio. Just, I mean, just to show, you know, the way you think too much. So what they really want to get is like your problem solving skills and like your UI design skills. So like, you know, even if you're like getting an internship, just have like one project that you could just at least, when you are, you know, speaking with recruiters, you can just like showcase it and say, oh, maybe if you were to design this product, or maybe this is a product that you enjoy using, right? So you decide to add a new feature that will make the experience better for you or better for users and that. So like, you just to showcase that, okay, this person can think like,
so do you think that can actually get someone a job? So someone approaches you, or someone creates a Kuda Bank case study, you know, they say something like,
yeah, oh, I mean, so yeah, if it is something impressive, yeah, yeah. I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah. That could possibly get you, at least, even if it's like get you an internship, yeah, but like, you know, there's a way somebody does something like, it's kind of impressive, like, that will just get person like a foot in the door. So like, they'll be like, okay, you can come and work with us for like 6 months and just see how we, you know, do our work and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Actually, some people do some stuff on like that. We actually see. I mean, so like once there are, we post stuff on Slack that maybe we see online. It could be like maybe LinkedIn.
Okay.
It could be Twitter. It could even be Instagram, or like people just doing like put about designs, or like doing a design where they like add a new feature that they would like to see. But like some of the stuff I just, oh wow, we like the way this person is thinking. So yeah.
Interesting.
Never know.
What was my dream company? Let me go and do case study.
Actually, that's actually like a good way to get noticed. So like, I know people that maybe they did like a redesign of a company's like product and maybe like posted it on LinkedIn or posted it online and maybe like tag somebody that worked there. Or even like maybe some people do code email where they just like send an email and say, hi, my name is Susan, so this is what I do, and like they just show the work. And you know, maybe if they're lucky, they might need that role at the time. So they just reach out to you and say, okay, you know, you can come and join us. Or just because they liked what you did, they can just say, okay, you know, just come to our office. And they just allow you to work for like just for a period of time, just to gain some experience. So yeah, some people have gotten jobs like that actually. Yeah.
Nice. Interesting. So you talked about the three things that like you think every portfolio should have.
Yeah.
When I asked you about what are you looking out for, if you have only 30 seconds, so you said amazing visuals. Like you can't.
Yes, very
you cannot
important.
Sacrifice on the visuals, right? And then you talked about non-technical jargon, and then you know the portfolio being concise, right? So what would you say are like maybe like the three things that if you see it, you're just closing portfolio. You're just like, nah, sorry, this is not it.
So three things. The first one would definitely be the design not being like, you know, even like to a decent level. So like if I look at the design and like, you know, maybe the color contrast is not good. So like if your design is even like breaking basic design fundamentals, like just I won't even bother, like, you know, because there's just no point, because just like this person is obviously this person is obviously still learning.
Okay.
There's even no point. So I'll just like close it. I'm like, you know, maybe next year or something. Like, I'll give a bit more time to go and learn. But the second thing would be, maybe the way the case study itself is portrayed, like the layout. So maybe, like, you know, maybe you can put, like, I don't know, maybe the solution on top. Like, it's not like, so you can't really, like, top to bottom, like, understand, okay, this was done first, this was done, this one done. So it just seems like maybe it's a bit scattered. Confused. So, like, I have to do something at the bottom, they have to go back to the top again, then after that, come back. Like,
it's not maybe a game or something.
Yes, yeah, so I'll just be like, you gotta structure your case study properly. And then I think another thing that actually, that I notice sometimes is something simple like typos, like your writing. So I feel like we did not take, so I mean, one important thing, skill you need as a designer is attention to detail, right? So I feel like if there are typos, I just feel like, oh, that you did not read it, you did not go back and, like, scan through it.
Mm.
You know, even when you are done, you should just, like, go through it and make sure that, you know, everything is okay. Because I just feel like if you are not able to pay close attention to detail, even in your case study, something that you wrote, then there's always that possibility that, you know, if I hire you for a job, you are definitely going to make a mistake. So, like, you're just not paying attention to what you are doing. That would just show me off a bit, right? Okay. So I just feel like, you know, you should have seen this stuff what you did. So, yeah. So, yeah, I think that would probably be my three things, to be honest. I know that thought don't seem like,
no, so but I actually think it's a very valid point. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. So, I guess we can go into, so what's the next question? What's the best place right now to host your portfolio? Or is there a best place to host your portfolio?
There really isn't, like, a best place. So you can use different platforms. I mean, thankfully right now we have a lot of, like, no code tools, so, like, you don't even have to, like, learn how to code, like, you know, create your portfolio. You can use Framer, you can use Webflow, you can use, I think some people even use, like, WordPress. There's also this thing, Semplex is like Squarespace or Wix, so, like, it's like a website builder pretty much. There's also even this, I just remember Polywork. Yeah, it's new, but yeah, Polywork. You can just, like, create, like, a portfolio for yourself. So it's also a website builder, and they have, like, you know, what they call blocks or, like, templates where you can, like, maybe, like, you can have, like, a Euro section, you can have, like, a contact page, you can have, like, so you just have, like, stuff that you can just pick and just, like, you need to create. So, like, you don't have to, like, create it from scratch. You just select what you want, and, like, different designs. And maybe you can still, like, tweak stuff, like, edit the stuff, but, like, they just give you, like, at least a starting point to make it easier for you. So, yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter. The platform doesn't matter. As long as, you know, you don't want to make your portfolio site heavy, it takes time to load. So, like, obviously, I know sometimes people put a lot of, like, you know, animation interaction on their portfolio because they want to make it as, you know, exciting as fun as possible and show, like, you know, my portfolio can do that. While all that is nice and good at the same time, that's what I understand, like, a recruiter is going to probably 20 or more portfolios in a day. If I go to your URL and, like, your portfolio is taking time to do, there's a possibility that they'll just, like, cancel it and put something else because they just don't have the time. It's nothing malicious, but, like, you know, you really need something that will just load, you know, fast enough. So don't try to put a lot of images or animation that just makes, so, like, think of websites. Time, right? So, like, that's something that will load fast enough that someone can easily just see your work and see what they need to see and, you know, move on something else. So, like, if your website is taking too much time, you also, you know, the way internet in Nigeria is not the best. So, if you have too many stuffs on your portfolio and the internet is not that great, I'll be loading, and the best
of
you don't want something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was also one of the reasons why I moved my portfolio from Figma to Figma. Figma will load when you get to play, and your net is not good. People are actually not load up like that far, so like nobody has time for that. So, like,
yeah,
you can just use Streamer. I think Streamer is like the most common website builder right now, because I mean, the offer it's fast, and like they offer like a ton of customization, like a ton of customization, and also like you can design your portfolio on Figma. You can just like transfer like the plugin that they have, where you just transfer it to Figma. So like you have basically just like moving to Figma, and then you could just like on tweaks and just publish it, and like, you know, your portfolio. So like super easy process. So I feel like just off the top of my head, Figma probably be like the best option. But you could explore, you know, other options. It doesn't really matter, but just think of your website load and make sure it's not, that'll take a lot of time. That you just do the sequence. Like you test it with a color, like send them the link and say, you know, how long did my portfolio open up, and did you have any issues? Obviously, when you're doing the portfolio, ask people to look at it. You could have maybe other designers look at it. You could have other people outside of your field just look at it, so that you are sure that there is no issue. You know, like when you are sending to recruiter, they now realize that something is not working out.
When I open on Edge, something is doing like
this. Yeah, maybe not. Like, you can test on like different browsers and stuff. Yeah. Just make sure that everything is. You can, that also ties back to paying attention to detail. Like, you know, somebody that actually, like, you know, putting effort into this thing. You know, like, okay, you just did the sharp stuff. You just assumed that everything is fine. You actually like tested it and make sure that, yeah, this thing is working well. So, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, everything, all the suggestions you made are right. Websites. So our portfolio websites, like the basic standard now, are they like the?
Yeah.
If you don't have a website, then you're playing.
To be very honest, like if you don't have like a place where somebody can see your work, you can't just say you're a designer, right? You have to really show the work, right? Anybody can create LinkedIn profile, anybody can create a Twitter profile and say, oh, I'm a designer assistant. So I mean, people sometimes lie, right? Even on LinkedIn, right? Anybody can create a LinkedIn profile and put the designer.
And they go and steal some people's designs.
Yeah, put the designer at Microsoft or put the designer at Apple. So it's not enough to just say that there has to be a central place where you come and see your work. And even with that self, I mean, most time when you do interviews, you ask questions. Some companies do assessments, so sort of like gauge, you know, your skill set and make sure that okay, this person actually can design and like can solve problems. That's not just like putting stuff in a portfolio that is not their work, because people do that. We still have people do that in a portfolio. So yeah, so you definitely need to have like a central place, even if it's just like a PDF of like some of your work. I think that also can fly in some cases. Some people are PDF, but ideally just have like a portfolio site. Yeah, ideally. Yeah.
So what about Dribbble and Behance, the notorious
Dribbble and Behance is actually okay. Some people, I've seen some like job applications where they say, oh, they leave a link for like your Dribbble or your Behance or your portfolio. So I feel like, you know, in some cases that could also fly, or in some cases at least down, I mean, let them say, okay, this person can I try to design them. Maybe like, you know, maybe they'll give you an assessment, or maybe they'll give you like a full presentation for you to come and like, you know, now talk about the design, but let them just see your work. So I think also that ties back to, I mean, your UI skills just have to be top notch, because that is what is really going to get you. Maybe I like get a call back or get a call from a recruiter like, okay, they've seen your design is like decent enough, right? So some people don't mind Dribbble and Behance allows you to sort of showcase like a case study stuff. Apart from just visual, you can also write, you know, you can also put text and explain. So yeah, Behance in some cases is like even enough to just like get you a call from a recruiter. So yeah.
So now the question that is on our minds now is, so, and you know, you had mentioned when we're talking about during the game where you talked about, you know, how AI is being used in design. Aren't there like AI tools, I guess, to help you write your portfolio? Like, can't I just drop the link to my Figma and say, please go and write my portfolio for me? Thank you.
I think
I'll write my case study.
So yeah, as far as like using AI to write your case study. So I mean, unfortunately, like, I don't think there's any.
Oh God,
actually, I can do that. And also, like, you know, the year I was not there with you when you were working on the project, so like, it can't help you to explain how you're doing it. Maybe I think what the AI can do is maybe like when you write your case study to a certain point, you sort of like maybe use ChatGPT to like maybe summarize,
okay,
or maybe ask it to simplify the language, or ask it like just simplify it and make it easier to read or something like that. But as far as like say me to write it, I don't think so.
Whether that's a promising product idea.
Actually, across
tech, I think everybody struggles with like creating their portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody can figure out the way that
people will have money. Imagine if you could pay
like that.
If you could pay $20 for an AI tool to design your portfolio,
to write, I think we would make use of it definitely.
Honestly, yeah.
Maybe you just feed it like the case study visual of the product, and like maybe just do like a quick summary, and you just like write.
That would be amazing.
That's like a $1 million business, like.
As in, that would be amazing. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so just a few more questions. Do you have like? Okay, what would you say is like your most controversial opinion about design portfolios? So, I mean, I think you've already mentioned how visuals are very important to like you, right? Do you think that's like the most controversial thing, or do you have any more? Just help us to spill some tea.
At this point, just thinking about the controversial.
Unpopular opinions about design portfolios. Like, for instance, if you just say that design portfolios are not necessary now, I can just close this episode. In fact,
because sometimes I just feel like when you're applying for a job, like, you know, there are actually a lot of questions. I'm just like, just give me the job first. When you give me a use, like, after like 1 month, you can tell. So, like, after like 1 month and give me work to do, you can tell if I can do the work or not. There's no need for like all this, like,
extra questions.
Like, just give me the job. And like, after 1 month, you say, okay, this guy is doing well or not. So, yeah, that would be my most controversial, like, opinion. Like, sometimes the process, because I hear sometimes like people do interviews, and like the interview like a 6-day process. And,
like, I saw that do,
like,
I'm
fun, like what, like after the first two or three, like what else do you need to
like ask? What more do you want to know?
Like, are you asking me for my blood type? Or like, what else do you need?
No. 6 interviews is too much, and I'm very sure they won't be happening. Let's say they won't happen in 6 weeks because they won't be able to go.
Yeah, so like it's probably over like maybe like 2 months. So like,
God.
I said the money is like some $100,000 per month.
They will pay you for your time during the interviews. Actually,
yeah, like maybe that will make it like manageable. But in some cases, when they give. I don't know if this is something that we do in Nigeria, but in some cases abroad, when some foreign companies, when they give like assessments and stuff, they actually pay you. If the assessment might take a bit of time, so like maybe they actually like maybe like you product, or they just give like a fictional product design, right? And they give you like maybe like 2 weeks, 3 weeks to do it or something. They will actually like pay like a small amount of money. They're paying for your time.
Even if you don't get the job, at least
just for the fact that they took a lot of your time for you, you'd be like a token, like, okay, just take this, which I feel is nice. So,
if we start doing that in Nigeria, myself, I'll start applying for design jobs.
You will just be applying, so at least you just get it on social media.
Oh my days. Awesome. So yeah, now we wanted to we would like if you could show us like what some of the best portfolios you've seen. Since we're on video, you could actually share your screen and show us, or you can just tell for people listening maybe the name of the designer and the website.
I think I can probably show that. But I've seen some really amazing, like, you know, portfolios. They're all designers, so this is his name is Koda, and this is just like a really, like, you know, so I like when people are pretty much just like creative, like he has like a creative playing section where you can see like the music you're listening to. That's a quick about me section, the photo of himself, experiment. So this is like probably like if you have like, you know, personal stuff that you just do, like a personal project, and then companies I've worked with, articles coming soon. So like, I mean, the way the portfolio is pretty much outlined, it's like a box model. I would like to, yes. I just like, I mean, it's not something that you see all the time. And yeah, I like that. So I have a special likeness to dark mode portfolio, dark mode websites, right? So I like dark mode. And also, you have like a find me, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and just an email.
And he managed to keep it in like one page, like.
Yeah, so every year, so that's an item. So everything's one place, so that there's a lot of schooling, right? I mean, you can just see everything to see at once and like all the projects and stuff. This is also by a Nigerian designer, Ike Mini. So this I also like his. No, it's not Notion, actually.
Oh, it looks like Notion.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be white. So, like, in a brief introduction, I am Susan. So, working on this. You know, work that. Another thing also I also like is when people put their availability period. So sometimes you might see, you know, available for work, or maybe you could see like available for work from so date. So like just let maybe like prospective clients or recruiters know, okay, you have good to work from this every time. So now you can see unavailable to Q3. So like, you know, for whoever might have wanted to work with him, you know, okay, maybe. You know, so like a reminder, like, okay, Q3, I can chat to this person.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not believable. And then, you know, once you reach out to the person, you can just copy an email, copy his email, and, you know, send him, I guess, the work that you need them. This is just an outline. So, I mean, one thing you really want to do your portfolio is you want to put the work front and center. It's like you don't want the tutor, like a prospective client, to be looking for examples of your work. Let it be just in their face. Like once they just come, they just see straight up and you just start like so like you can just see this case study and you can just dive right in pretty much. Sometimes case studies could be in, you know, work in progress. You can see case study in draft and all of that, which is fine. Finally, that was valuable. Just to see like some, you know, UI shots. I mean, that UI is very important. Your UI being very good is what is going to get the whoever's coming to your site interested in wanting to work with you. So, you know, it's very important that you actually show examples of, like, you know, your work. I mean, so when you join the interview, you could dive deeper into how you came about it, but at least let the UI be good enough that it catches anybody's attention. Then also this one more person is he's a designer and developer, but like I said, I like things that are a bit out the norm, and you know, see examples of his work. You can see like what each project looks like, which is obviously then like that to click it and, you know, read about it. Once again, UI shorts, very important. I mean, you don't necessarily have to have it, but you just nice to just see, oh, this is what this person is doing, because you just catch the person's whoever is on your site attention, like, oh, this person actually would be good at, you know, what they do, and let's go together. So also your contact information is very important. So after you've pretty much like, let's say, won the person over with your design, now you want to give them a means to contact you, right? So I'll see your work, and then once I see your work and I like it, I then want you to reach out to you to say, oh, I would like to work with you. So maybe put your number if possible, put your, you know, obviously your email address, but you definitely have to put it away for people to be able to contact you immediately, because once somebody sees your work, I'm like, okay, I they like this person, how can I talk to them? So just give them that means to just quickly reach out. You don't hide this contact information under another. Let it also be front and center, like your, like a portfolio. So so these are just like examples of like a portfolio that just blew my mind pretty much. So
awesome. So you know, I noticed something, and I like your perspective on it. So the first and this portfolio, I can kind of, I got a hint of the designer's styles. I got a hint of like who they are and kind of like their mood, right? But I didn't get that with the Nigerian designer. Do you think that, for me, I'm ready, if I was recruiting for a design job, I'm ready to hire that first guy, like already. I liked the picture there. I feel like I know a bit about him. Even the music, like you said, I feel like I know a bit about him. I can see from this, right, his visual work is good. Of course, I want to look at the case studies, right? But if I had to select one person, I'm ready to go with number one. I would say the Nigerian designer, I can see he's capable, but I don't really know much about him. So do you think that's...
Yeah, I think also it's good to add a bit of... Yeah, so I understand what you mean. It's good to add a bit of personality to your... portfolio also, like if you can just add a bit of your personality. You could also post like, you know, you have like an, maybe have like an about page. Okay, he has an about page. You look at that, you know. So like stop that.
Oh yeah, here now I do
maybe
get
you do, maybe sense you of do outside of, you know, designer, like stuff that you are listening to, maybe something that I just currently or repeat music, watching, what is currently watching, what is currently reading. I mean you don't necessarily have to, but like just show who you are, like just like your personality. Like,
ooh, I love this life. Quick shout out so to, I guess, friends, mentors. I really like
my
that.
Friends, like, people that like contributed to, you know, him being this, which is nice. So, yeah, I mean, I just like it, just makes it less robotic and less, you know, like, okay, this is an actual person that actually did this, and this is what the person likes, and this is what they're interested in. I mean, you just show that they're an actual person.
Yeah,
and, you know, like, it's not AI that did your case, your proposal, your case.
I swear. I'd love if you could please share the links to these three portfolios so we can share them with the audience.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. So the next, virtually the last question was around what resources would you recommend to someone that's trying to build their portfolio? Are there any, like, I don't know, documentation or any things you think they should read or listen to before they go ahead and build their portfolio?
Okay, yeah, I could share this article on this popular Medium site. I actually even have it open right now because I was it's actually very like informative on like some of the things that, you know, recruiters look out for and like some of the issues that, you know, people have in their portfolio that, yeah, very, very, I think everybody should. I posted it on like different WhatsApp group that I'm in, like designer group that I'm in, and I posted it on Twitter because I just feel like everybody should read this like article. So, like, when I read that, I was like, oh, this is like mind blowing stuff. I mean, this would be very beneficial to especially like a lot of like junior designers as to why you probably are not getting a call back or a call from any applicants. But yeah, I'll post it. There's also another one on LinkedIn. Maybe I'll post that after. But yeah. But this article is like really, really great. Like, it's
Oh yeah, like, actually, like, I saw this a few weeks ago.
Most I want to assume most people have probably stumbled on it or come across it by now. If you're a designer, you should probably see it. I'll leave you online if you haven't. You should definitely read it. Definitely.
Awesome. I mean, it's UX Collective. I feel like they're always sharing valuable.
They're always sharing. So I know that. I mentioned on right. Like, a lot of information is not fact checked, but for US Collective, I mean, the articles are actually like really good. So even if you don't, for a lot of people as a designer, even if it's just like UX Collective articles on Medium, it's enough. So, like, you know, they always make sure that there's a lot of walking through, you know, the articles that they put out. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Deji. Like, I think you've shared a lot of valuable insights on this call. I don't see anyone like listening to this and not having a solid, like, you know, idea of where to start with their portfolio. So thank you so much. I would say final words, any advice for anyone, like any people that are trying to get into design or maybe they're in design and they're having like a hard time, right now? Any advice?
Yeah. I think right now, because of the way the job market is, I think it might feel a bit, well, I see this question. I think at the time when I got into design, I think that was when like design or like the tech industry was sort of like, you know, coming up, and like there was lots of like opportunities and like, you know, like this booming industry. So at least I know recently there have been a lot of news about like layoffs, especially like tech companies and tech groups specifically. But at the end of the day, people are always building new products, right? So people will always need developers, people will always need designers, people will always need product managers. So like even if you are feeling a bit destroyed, either by entering or maybe you're already there and like, you know, you are finding it difficult to maybe get your first rule. I mean, so you don't have to like, eventually you will, right? You might take a bit of that the time to like get your foot in the door, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, don't like be discouraged. Like, and I think you could do to help yourself is as you're learning or as you're like designing stuff or like just building stuff, even if it's just like personal projects, you're just like, you just like a designer, like a product that you like, you did a design like a new product with a new feature, you could just post it online. So you need to really, really share your work. That's actually like a very important. But I mean, if, no matter how good your designs are, fake, like nobody knows what you're
doing.
Yeah, your design is just on a laptop.
Yeah, it's only you that knows that you're amazing.
Yeah, it's only me. A lot of that know that designs are good. So like, post it on Twitter. LinkedIn, there are a lot of like sites now for designers to showcase their work. There's like Dribbble, there's Behance, there's layers.com, yeah, layers.something. There's like VidCV, there are different platforms. Like, I mean, if you are consistent with posting your work, definitely, I mean, even if it's just like without hitting you up or somebody sending you a message, say, oh, I saw your work on this, are you open to? You know, we have an opening at our office. Are you open to this or that? I mean, and you just get your first job from there. So like, you know, might not really be like you apply. Sometimes the opportunity just come because either somebody has seen your work or somebody prefer for you and say, oh, I saw these guys work somewhere, I saw these girls work somewhere. Like the person will reach out to you and say, oh, are you open to, you know, some opportunity? So it's very, very important that you share your work, right? So even if it's taking months for you to, you know, find something, as long as you're pursuing your work, eventually I can guarantee you that eventually something will come up. So like I've gotten gigs from Twitter just because somebody saw my work and just said, oh, I did, are you available for something? And you know, I just got gig from there. So please, very important, share your work. Don't leave your design. Don't leave it on your laptop. Please even if it doesn't even mean like you have to like all the screens or like new thing, but like just share
maybe
like
one really cool style of button like you like designed.
Like a few screens and say, oh, this is what I'm working on right now, the work in progress. You know, just like so just definitely just share. That's very important. Share your work.
Yeah, it's an exciting time actually, I think, to be a designer. There's so many opportunities for design right now. And I mean, like you said, it probably looks like, I don't know, a very competitive field, right? But even if they are badass designers out there, they can't do all the design work.
I feel like
you two get the chance to
they can't work for all the companies in the world. So,
exactly.
Like, the opportunities are still there. So,
Awesome. Thank you so much, Deji. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Not at this point. I mean, so like I have, as you said in the beginning, like a startup that I'm kind of working with somebody. I'm excited about that. So as time goes on, we'll put down more information about that. But I don't have a lot to shoot now, like to showcase now. But like it's still like a lot of things that's like early stages. But like as more stuff comes on, I'll put it out there. So
awesome. So if you're listening and you like to like get to know more about Deji, you can delve I will try to use that one. No, sorry, if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go and join Twitter.
I can't explain. Need to be on Twitter to like you actually need to be on Twitter too.
Yeah,
and Twitter is actually also a place for you to follow. So you can also follow like experience designers. So Twitter allows you to like meet people in other industries, meet designers in from Apple, Google, different companies, and honestly, sometimes they talk about their work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they even show like sickness of like show, and you can also like ask them questions. Maybe if they're willing to answer it at the time. So, like, it's very important that you are in a, I would like put like a social space that has other people in your field. Like, you really cannot do this design work and just be like in your room, in your house. Mm-hmm. You're not online, you're not on LinkedIn, you're not anywhere. Like, so please join a design community, whether on WhatsApp, whether on Slack. There are a lot of like Slack, designer Slack groups that are free. You just sign up to join and like they let you in. You can ask questions, share your work and get feedback. Sometimes they post jobs. So like you just need to be part of a community and you just need to be online to be active. Mm-hmm. Not in your room, not in a laptop all the time. You need to be out there.
Yeah.
Maybe, like I'm an introverted person, but still you need to like still put yourself out there. It doesn't mean you have to like talk every day or be very social, but just continue to be active. You need to know that okay, I mean, this person is a designer, so you cannot do this work all on your own.
And one thing I've seen is that aside from like the capability, like the technical capability, people are also hiring based on like how well you fit into their team. If you
are the kind of person,
do you get, if you fit into their work culture. Because and then how would they know that about you? So aside from the interview, the things you tweet about, you know, things like that,
what you say
in the community that you're in, you know. So awesome stuff, Deji. Thank you so much. Before I start asking another question again, let me just wrap it up here. So we'll definitely link Deji's Twitter in the show notes, and then you can just follow him there. His handle is Deji Not Dope. Awesome. Thank you so much, Deji. And that wraps up another insightful episode of the Spotlight Podcast. A heartfelt thank you to Deji for sharing your experiences on how to build a solid portfolio. For our listeners, whether you are a beginner or an experienced product designer, I hope you found this discussion helpful. And before you go, please feel free to send any questions you have or tell us, you know, who you would like us to bring on the podcast next. We have a link in the show notes. And don't forget to give us a rating and follow us on social media. Until next time, this is Iwalala Shobowale signing off. Thank you.